Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 13th of April. This hour of the program, how the people of Poland are dealing with the terrible news of Saturday's plane crash, which claimed the lives of the country's top political and military leadership, including President Lech Kaczynski and his wife, the deputy foreign minister, a former president, dozens of members of parliament, including the deputy speaker, the head of the National Security Bureau, the Army and Navy chiefs of staff, and the president of a national bank, also the former dock worker whose firing in 1980 led to the famous Solidarity strike that ultimately ended communism in Poland. Adding to the horror of this was the fact that the plane, which crashed in western Russia, was on its way to commemorate the massacre of 20,000 members of Poland's officer corps by the Soviet secret police at Cotton Woods in 1940 following the Red Army's invasion of Poland. This has been an image that has lasted a lifetime, and certainly what happened on Saturday is an image that will last a lifetime for millions of people who live in that country and around the world. This hour of the program, we speak with Professor Neil Pease, a professor and chair of the History Department at UW-Milwaukee. He is vice president of the Polish-American Historical Association, the book review editor of the Polish Review, and a member of the editorial board for Polish-American Studies. He has written two books on Poland, Rome's Most Faithful Daughter, The Catholic Church and Independent Poland, 1914 to 1939, and Poland, the United States, and the Stabilization of Europe, 1919-1933. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Professor Pease during the course of this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Professor Pease, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Not at all. My pleasure.
It is hard to imagine how a country is dealing with the enormity of this loss. We've had losses here in the United States, presidential losses, assassinations, but to lose all of these members of government, how do you cope with that?
Well, it's a terrific blow. There have been plane crashes that have claimed the lives of governmental leaders in the recent past, not talking about Poland, but these have generally been one or two people, small planes. This is the first time in world history, really, that this many high-ranking members of a government have gone down in one plane. It's a terrific emotional blow, but actually the constitution of the country is functioning. The government is carrying on. They're coping with it reasonably well.
Mm-hmm. They were, tell us more about where they were going. They were going to a commemoration at Cotton Woods where there was this horrific massacre that I don't think people know very much about. Can you talk about that and what the commemoration was to be?
Yes, I can. Now, a little warning both for you and listeners. There's a complicated historical background to this.
No, that's okay. I want to know it.
Okay. Got to go back at least 71 years to the outbreak of the Second World War in 1939. A lot of people forget that the Soviet Union, although eventually it joined the Allied coalition fighting Nazi Germany, at the beginning of the war, Soviet Union and Nazi Germany were, in effect, partners. The war began in September of 1939 following a secret deal between Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union. The Soviet dictator at the time was Stalin. And Poland, of course, was the country that lay between Germany and the Soviet Union. And they made a secret deal to carve up Eastern Europe between them. Germany invaded Poland in September 1st, 1939. The Soviets invaded Eastern Poland on September 17th. They divided Poland between them. So the Soviets had taken eastern Poland, intending that it was going to be absorbed into the Soviet Union, and they captured a large number of Polish soldiers, and they held them in prison camps, and they had to figure out what to do with them. So what they did was to interrogate them, decide which of them might in future cooperate with the Soviets and consign the rest of them to mass execution. The executions were carried out by the Soviet secret police on Stalin's orders in the early spring of 1940, 70 years ago. The massacres were uncovered during the war itself by the Germans, who, after they had invaded the Soviet Union, I told you this is going to be complicated, discovered some of the bodies in the Katyn Forest, precisely this area in western Russia that we're talking about. They said, look what happened. The Soviets did this. Now, this is where it gets interesting. The Soviets denied that they had carried out the deed, although it was perfectly obvious that they had, and blamed it on the Germans. The Soviets won the war, and, of course, they sort of took over Eastern Europe, and Poland as well was forced under communist government, under the domination of the Soviet Union. And so following World War II, for about 50 years, during the entire Soviet era, the entire Polish communist era, the truth about Katyn, although it was generally known, everybody knew, every Pole knew who had carried out the Katyn massacre, but officially you couldn't talk about it. You know, officially, you had to observe the lie that had been carried out by the Germans. The truth about Katyn was finally admitted by the Russians only in 1990, 1992, immediately upon the fall of the Soviet Union. And the fact that you can now talk about Katyn openly, this has been a major symbol for Poles, sort of recovering their history, and the idea of wanting to observe and honor the people who had died at Katyn, whose deaths had been covered up and lied about for 70 years, 60 years, strikes very strong chords. So the president of Poland was going to Katyn in western Russia to join in a ceremony honoring the 70th anniversary of the massacre. Sorry for that lengthy.
No, I was wondering about the history of this. So this was the first time that this massacre was to have been observed?
Not precisely. The Russians admitted their guilt, finally, in 1990, and then turned over documents, including the sort of smoking gun document with Stalin's signature on it, saying, you know, kill all these people, in 1992. However, as you may know, relations between Poland and Russia, even in the post-communist era, have been difficult at best.
Right.
The Russian government, largely dominated by Vladimir Putin, has sort of backtracked over the last few years and very grudgingly admitted the Soviet role in Katyn, and to the extent that they were seen as that the Russians were seen as uncooperative or even reverting to a sort of renewed cover-up about what had happened in the forest back in 1940. This was a source of ongoing tension between Poland and Russia, and so it's been observed, but primarily by the Poles and the Russians, or at least official Russian opinion, trying to sort of do a, I don't want to say a cover up again, but you know, sort of a let's not talk about this.
Right. Yeah. Is there any memorial, Professor Pease, or is this just they were just going into the forest to commemorate this?
There is a memorial. There is a memorial there. This is in an area of western Russia, what's now on the western frontier of Russia. And one thing that's useful to remember is that the Katyn murders were not unique. I mean, this was the Soviet Union during the Stalin era at the height of a terror that might have claimed, tens of millions
yes.
of victims.
Mm.
And there's many other mass graves, but of Soviet subjects, Soviet citizens, in the same neck of the woods, which is one reason why it was chosen
mm-hmm.
As the site of the massacre. There is a memorial, and in fact, there had been a joint Polish-Russian commemoration of the massacre at Katyn just a couple of days before that included the two prime ministers, Putin for Russia and Donald Tusk for Poland. And then President Kaczynski, the Polish president, had organized his own observance, which was going to take place on the same ground a couple of days later, on the Saturday that the plane went down.
Mm-hmm. So would it be fair to say that we were seeing an opening of better relations between these two countries? Or are they, not that they're buddies here, but were
no.
they cooperative in any way?
Things were getting better in the last few months. And in an odd way, the Katyn issue has been a sort of barometer of the degree to which Polish-Russian relations over the last few years have been better or worse. And there had been a sort of warming in the last few years. Not to make too much of this, there are still strong differences between those two countries, strong historical differences that won't be easy to bridge. And Poland, in the last few years, since the fall of communism, has aligned itself very closely with the West, very closely with the United States. This is not something that post-communist Russia wants to see. And so the two countries, there have been very great tension between these two countries. But there has been a warming in the last few months. And one signal of this, in fact, was a sort of greater Russian openness about Katyn. The fact that Prime Minister Putin had agreed for the first time, really, in the name of official Russia, to take part in a memorial at Katyn on Russian soil in partnership with representatives of Poland. That was seen as a sort of, that was a new departure. So it's possible as well, not to take this too far, but the Russian response to the crash itself has been, well, in a word, exemplary. They've done and said all the right things, expressed sympathy, cooperation, opened the investigation of the crash to Polish officials. This has actually received a very warm and sympathetic response in Poland itself, and it's possible, not for sure, but possible, this could lead to something of, some people are calling it an emotional breakthrough in Polish-Russian relations.
Mm-hmm.
There's too much separating them to think that they will ever be close in the sense that Poles like the United States, and they want to align their official policies with the United States. But to the extent that it might break the ice, frosty relations between Poland and Russia, that remains to be seen, but it's a possibility.
Yes. Let's talk about the crash for a moment.
Sure.
I was rather astounded that this airplane didn't sound like it was in very good shape, and then I read that they couldn't afford to have a better aircraft to carry all of these people who are running a country.
Yeah.
What did that mean?
There's been a lot of discussion about that and whether the proper precautions were taken. The plane itself was fairly old. It was of Soviet and Soviet-era manufacture. It wasn't state-of-the-art. It didn't have all of the safety features that would now be considered standard in modern aircraft. And there had been murmurings in the past that the fleet was getting old, it was time to replace it, and they just never got around to it. That being said, the initial investigations, and they're ongoing, and at this point we can only we can't be sure, but it appears that there's a growing consensus that the actual fault of the crash didn't have so much to do with the equipment or the plane or the age of the plane, but with pilot error. After all, these planes do take off and land all the time, and in this particular case, the guessing now seems to be that the pilot simply erred in the landing.
Yes. Let's talk a little bit about the background, because it's very, very interesting, of Kaczynski and his brother, a twin brother,
yep.
And they were, it sounds like Ronald Reagan in a way, they were child actors who became interested in politics?
Yes. The comparison with Reagan is not that far-fetched. These were twin brothers. The president who died in the plane crash was Lech Kaczynski, same first name as the more famous Lech Wałęsa, the
mm-hmm.
leader of Solidarity, and his twin brother Jarosław, who has served as Polish prime minister. They first became known as child actors in communist Poland. They starred in a popular film. Then they became involved in politics, underground politics, joining the dissident movement in Poland during the communist era, the people who were agitating for change, overturning the dictatorship. They became associated with Solidarity after Solidarity began in 1980, spent some time in jail in the later communist years in the 1980s. Then with the fall of communism in 1989, they entered the democratic politics of the new Poland and served in various posts. Lech Kaczynski served as mayor of Warsaw, the capital and largest city. And then, a few years ago, they founded a party that still operates in party, the Law and Justice Party, PIS in Polish. And Lech Kaczynski was elected president. His twin brother, Jarosław, was prime minister. For a while, Poland has a divided government, like many European countries, with a president and a prime minister sharing responsibilities. And so for a long time, the thing you heard was, you know, how confusing this was for people abroad, because they couldn't tell which twin was prime minister.
Oh, my.
Which, you know.
Yes.
That's no longer, that was no longer so much of an issue, because Jarosław Kaczynski is no longer prime minister, although he may step into the shoes of his late brother and run as candidate for president of the PIS party in Lech Kaczynski's stead.
I've been reading this label is attached to Kaczynski's name, that he was conservative.
Yeah.
What does it mean to be conservative leader of Poland?
Very good question. Poland's politics nowadays tend to be fairly moderate, and there is broad agreement on most very important elements of policy. Broad agreement that the country is to be a democracy, broad agreement that the orientation of the country's foreign policy would be pro-Western and pro-United States. Within those boundaries, there are three major factions. There is a party of the moderate left, which is made up primarily of ex-communists who went into democratic politics afterwards. There is a party of the center, and the current prime minister, Donald Tusk, is of that party. And then the PIS, the Kaczynski Party, is primarily identified as a party of the center-right, nationalist, Catholic in orientation, The Kaczynskis themselves were strongly suspicious of Russia, and it was one reason why Polish-Russian relations in recent years were rather complicated. The Russians preferred to deal with the Prime Minister, Tusk, whom they saw as easier to deal with. And very often, one doesn't speak ill of the recently dead, right? But during his lifetime and during his presidency, President Kaczynski was widely seen by many in Europe as something of a minor nuisance who would strongly align Poland with the United States, sometimes in opposition to the general ideas of the Western European governments. He was a strong proponent, for instance, of bringing countries like Ukraine and Georgia into NATO, sometimes against what Western Europe saw as better judgment. He was a strong advocate of the placement of American missiles in Poland as a deterrent to the possibility of Iranian nuclear missiles, and this very often got him on the wrong side of both the Russians on the one hand and other Europeans who were not as enthusiastic about so strongly aligning their countries with the United States, particularly during the presidency of George W. Bush.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls for you, Professor Pease, and we'll do so in a moment. We're talking about Poland this hour and the terrible, terrible tragedy in Poland with the loss of the president. This plane crash on Saturday. They lost 97 people in all, including the president, his wife, the deputy foreign minister, a former president, so many members of parliament. And what is doubly tragic, if you can even say that, is that these people were on the way to commemorate the massacre of 20,000 members of Poland's officer corps by the Soviet secret police at Katyn Woods in 1940. Our phone number will welcome your phone calls, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email should be up and running as well, and that is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program this Tuesday, David Remnick will be with us, editor of The New Yorker. He has a very thorough examination of President Barack Obama's life from his early years in elementary school. Actually, it goes back before that because it examines his mother and his grandparents and his father and his grandparents on that side of the family, his years in Indonesia. It just looks, it's interesting as he's dealing now with loose nukes, how nuclear proliferation was something that he used to talk about with friends in college. It's been a theme of something he's been vitally interested in for a good chunk of his almost adult and then adult life. The book, The Bridge, The Life and Rise of Barack Obama, just released. David will be with us the second hour of our program. This hour, we're talking about Poland and their very enormous loss over the weekend and welcoming phone calls. 800-486-8655 is the number. Derek from Round Lake is our first caller. Hello, Derek.
Yes, hi. Good morning. Good show. As a writer, actually, I used to cover Polish politics for Asian media. I think that Katyn massacre is really a tragedy, not only for Poland, but also for all the Central and Eastern European countries. However, that said, Polish history is much more complicated in the relationship between Russia and the Soviet Union that I think which American media tends to really kind of skip. What really comes into place, for example, unresolved issues from the Russian side, basically extermination and starving to death over 100,000 Soviet prisoners in 1920 Polish-Soviet War, which also has really kind of came into place, which American media tends to ignore. as well as the partition of Czechoslovakia, which Poland participated along with Hitler a year before World War II started. So I think what's really difficult to really understand is simply, why is the historical perspective not really being put evenly on both sides to make sure that both countries look honestly in their own histories and basically move forward, you know, with the good relations and without any kind of a whitewashing of their own history instead of just, you know, painting one country versus the other.
Professor Pease.
Yeah. Certainly, both countries have a long history, and both of them would have things to answer for in their past. Now, the particular matter that that Derek mentions about the supposed mass starvation or death of Soviet prisoners in a war between Poland and the Soviet Union in 1920, well, that's an item that is often mentioned in Russian propaganda, in particular of late, but most serious historians dismiss it. The deaths in prison camps during the war in 1920, well, it happened on both sides, the Russians and the Polish as well, and one has to remember that the general conditions in Eastern Europe in that time, right after the First World War, were dreadful, you know, epidemics of typhus and typhoid fever and the like. The partition of Czechoslovakia in 1938, well, that was a complicated business, and most Poles nowadays agree that it was definitely not good form for their government to join in that, although from the Polish point of view, they were claiming Polish territory that had been snatched from them unjustly, but this is back and forth, which has nothing really to do with the matter of the Katyn massacre or the central position that Katyn plays in recent history between Poland and Russia, where it would be very difficult to argue that there has been equality of who has done what to whom in the recent history of Poland and Soviet Union, Russia, and even Russian leaders nowadays are coming around to say this.
Thanks, Derek, for the call. Lida is next from Toma. Hi, Lida.
Yes, good morning. I thought this would be of interest. I have a friend, Akasha, who was a student at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, I think in 2000. And while she was there, there were other students also from Poland, and two of them were on this plane and were killed in this terrible tragedy.
Oh, dear.
One is president of the National Bank of Poland, and the other, pardon?
Oh, no, please, go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, and the other was Minister of National Defense and Chief of the Presidential Chamber. Both were 47 years old, and I thought that would be a local connection, a sad local connection.
Mm. Yeah. There are, you hear stories like this. For instance, you might have seen that there was a Polish-American artist from Chicago who had built a monument, designed a monument to Katyn, which is now in Chicago. He was invited to go on the plane and went down with it. There are any number of chilling historical ironies. You had people whose fathers or uncles had died at Katyn in 1940 who now died at Katyn on Saturday. The wife of the First Lady of Poland, Maria Kaczyńska, her uncle was one of the soldiers killed at Katyn.
Hmm. Can you talk about, that was interesting, the La Crosse connection here. Can you tell me briefly just about the Polish population in Chicago and in Milwaukee? It's quite large.
Yes.
How did that happen?
Well, there was a lot of immigration from Europe in general in the 19th century, particularly peasants from the poorer areas of Europe, Southern Europe, Eastern Europe. So that's the era when you had all these immigrants from Ireland and Italy and Russia and, of course, Poland. And most of them came over here looking for work. They were unskilled, uneducated, for the most part, looking for any work they could find. And so many of them gravitated to the industrial cities. So most Polish populations or Polish-American populations that you now find are in Great Lakes cities like Chicago or Detroit or Buffalo. Now, Milwaukee is particularly interesting because Milwaukee had a sort of unique ethnic background, that being that there was a strong German element, right? Everybody mm-hmm. knows this. And during the 19th century, much of what is now Poland was ruled by Germany. So what you had were many Poles from German-ruled Polish lands who came to Milwaukee and Wisconsin in general, for one thing, because they could speak German, and so they could work as workers in factories where very often the foreman or the owner was a German speaker. And so Chicago, you know, you sometimes hear that Chicago is the second most Polish city in the world, you know, after Warsaw.
Yes.
Milwaukee and Wisconsin, you know, about 10% of the population can claim some considerable Polish ethnic background.
Thanks, Lida, for your call. Beverly is next from Rushford, Minnesota. Hi, Beverly.
Hi. I'd like to know if on the plane there was a vice president of Poland, or maybe they don't have one.
They don't really have one. The succession by constitution passed to the speaker of the parliament. Komorowski is his name, and he was in Warsaw. You know, not the entire government was on this plane. I mean, you know, the prime minister was not on the plane. The foreign minister. The speaker of the parliament. So they don't have a vice president in the sense that we do. But the constitution of Poland does provide for the orderly transfer of the duties of the president to the speaker of the parliament. And that's what's happening right now. Now, the constitution also calls for an early presidential election, which will take place probably in June.
And thank you very much for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. Bill from Onalaska. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I wonder if you'd just sort of comment on my observations about Eastern Europe. I've traveled some there as a tourist. I, you know, go to the museums, mm-hmm. and you always see the map on the wall. And the map always shows, you know, Poland when it was huge. Mm-hmm. Or Albania when it was huge, or Bulgaria when it was big, and then, you know, there'll be a war hero, the war hero who, you know, beat the Poles or beat the Ukrainian. I don't know who it is, and they always I seem to identify their self image is one of being the leader in the Eastern Europe, being the largest and the strongest. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine when you put, you know, eight or so countries all next to each other, each one thinking that they were put upon by the neighbor who took their land and whose church is really the holy church, the real church, the Polish church or the Hungarian church. It doesn't create a very nice environment.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good observation. This is an area with a long and complicated history. Going back to the first part of your comments, much of the area that we now know as Eastern Europe or East Central Europe was at one time or another ruled by the Kingdom of the Commonwealth of Poland back in the day. The Poland of today is much smaller and lies considerably to the west of what historically was Poland. At one time or another, most of the areas that we now associate with Lithuania, Belarus, and Ukraine were also parts of Poland. Now, this is an area that has been subjected to waves of conquerors over the centuries. Germans, Austrians, Turks, Russians, Swedes. So very often what you find in that part of the world is that these are peoples who have had to live under foreign rule, or they haven't had a state, a country of their own, simply to survive. They've had to develop a strong sense of national identity and nationalism, and they have developed a very strong historical sense of who their friends are, who their enemies are, and most of the time they define as their enemies the peoples who live right next to them, right? So what this means is that the history of Eastern and East Central Europe has been extremely messy, and of late, meaning the last 100 years, extremely bloody. Although the bloodiness is has much less to do with what the peoples of Central Europe do to themselves, but what the Germans or the Russians have imposed on them during the period of totalitarian rule, whether Nazi or Soviet. But yeah, it's what you say is generally true. The history of this region is quite complicated.
Can you go back for just a moment to the missile defense, the deal that was struck by President Bush, how it was changed, the desire for a missile defense shield on the part of the Polish government, and what happened after we had a change in administration in terms of promising that?
Right. I seem to be saying complicated a lot, and for that I apologize, but Poland, as well as some of the other countries of what used to be the Soviet bloc, the formerly communist countries, have generally tied themselves to the West. Some of them, including Poland, have joined NATO. This is something that Russia, post-Soviet Russia, deplores. And from their point of view, what they are trying to do is simply restore the sort of traditional Russian prestige or power in the part of the world that they see as their own. Poland and the other recently liberated countries, naturally enough, from their point of view, see this as worrisome signs of Russia trying to throw its weight around the way they've done for centuries, blah, blah, blah. So, Poland has tried to tie itself very closely to the United States. This led to the decision or the project put forward by the Bush administration a few years ago of placing missiles in Poland whose intent would not to be to aim at Russia, but rather to serve as interceptors of against the possibility of Iranian missiles if Iran would develop a nuclear capability. The Russians hollered bloody murder about this, objected strongly. The Poles, in the face of Russian objections, said, no, we're going to keep our deal with the United States. Then the Obama administration comes in, and for good reasons or bad, they decided to change the policy. We're not going to follow through with the Bush plan. This angered some Poles who thought, look, you know, we stuck out our necks. We committed ourselves to support of the American policy. We risked the displeasure of Russia. I mean, Russia even threatened to target nuclear weapons against Poland if they agreed to the American plan. And now, Poles speaking to the United States, you're ditching us. You know, you sort of left us exposed, and we don't particularly care for this. Now, there have been attempts by the Obama administration to try to patch this up and say, no, look, We're going to put missiles in, but there will be a different kind. It will actually improve Polish defense capabilities, but simply not the kind of missiles that the Russians are objecting to. This is still sort of ongoing. This is an irritant in Polish-American relations, but it's by no means enough to change Polish policy away from its strong pro-American stance.
More phone calls in a moment. Professor Neil Pease, professor and chair of the History Department at UW-Milwaukee, vice president of the Polish-American Historical Association, the book review editor of the Polish Review, a member of the editorial board for Polish-American Studies. He's written two books on Poland. He's our guest to talk about the tragedy of Saturday and to give us a little bit of a historical reference for all of this. Our phone number, we have a couple lines open if you'd like to join us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program this Tuesday, David Remnick, editor of The New Yorker, on his book, The Bridge, The Life and Rise of Barack Obama. Let's go to an email, Professor Pease. I find it curious that they said their investigation, in that investigation, there was no problem with the plane. After a couple of days, when it takes our National Transportation Safety Board about a year to make that determination when a plane crashes.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's probably proper to say that the investigation is still ongoing. They've got the black boxes from the plane. And supposedly they're proceeding very carefully, so that the Russian and Polish officials can join in the investigation equally. It's probably more proper to say that as of now, there's apparently no reason to believe that there was mechanical failure involved or that the crash was the fault of the equipment. Of course, the weather was very bad. It was quite foggy. Visibility was near zero. I heard an interview with there was another plane that had landed carrying journalists a bit earlier. And on Saturday, I heard an interview with one of the journalists on the plane saying that their landing was pretty scary too. They looked out the plane, and the fog was so thick. Milk. Mm. But as of now, the primary theory is that the pilot simply erred in his approach. He came in too low. He clipped a radio antenna. Now, for one thing, this is a very small military airport outside of Smolensk in Russia. Not a big civilian airport with big wide runways and lots of clearance or anything like that. Came in too low, compounded by poor visibility, clipped an antenna. Then the plane apparently hit the tops of trees, and following that, crashed to the ground and exploded, falling a few hundred meters short of the runway.
Mm-hmm. Just a question about politics here. Yep. There's no way of knowing this for sure, but I'm wondering about the kind of support that Kaczynski had, and if you see a center-right party continuing to hold power, or if you see a change on its way.
Well, that's very interesting, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens in Poland. Naturally, of course, nobody wants to talk too much about politics, but the main rivalry, or it appeared that what was going to happen, there was going to be presidential elections coming up anyway later in the year. You've had a divided government in Poland where the prime minister, who holds a majority in parliament, was the sort of center party, the Citizens' Platform, so-called, represented by Prime Minister Tusk. the PIS, Kaczynski's party, the center-right party, was actually becoming fairly unpopular. And there was, you know, they already had a minority in parliament, and there was widespread speculation that had Kaczynski run for president, had he lived, and run for president, that he might not have been reelected, that he would have been defeated by the candidate of the center, who just happens to be the man who is now the acting president of Poland. But there's much speculation now that the death of Kaczynski could generate a wave of sympathy that could lead to you know, greater support for the PIS, for the Kaczynski party. So we'll just have to see. Mm-hmm. But it's entirely possible.
Let's go to Herb from Clintonville. Hi, Herb.
Yes, hello. Say, I'm still always curious, considering the Russians' attitude toward dissidents in their own country and how they have these sudden unexplained deaths and so on and so forth.
Oh, yeah.
And by, you know, the basically a good share of the Polish government disappearing mm-hmm. in this plane. And so far, all I've seen is what the Russians say was on the black boxes.
Yeah.
Now, it does appear that it might have been part of there from what we know.
Mm-hmm.
But knowing Russia's past history, I, you know, it just, it's a little interesting.
I hear you. The possibility of conspiracy is the idea that that would occur to people as a possibility was simply inescapable. There's no getting around that. I'm sure that that's one reason why the Russians themselves are scrambling so much to say, look, we're cooperating. Look, we're being above board about this. It is true that given the Russian past, you can't exclude the possibility from the outset. It is also true that even in post-Soviet Russia, there have been any number of mysterious deaths of people seen as opponents or critics of the Kremlin. That being said, there appears to be no reason, as of now, to expect any sort of, or to suspect any sort of skullduggery or anything like that. You know, Polish operated plane. Polish pilot, you can't conspire to create fog. You know, I think the caller raises an excellent point that has to be dealt with, but as of now, I would be extraordinarily surprised if anything like that would come to light.
Thanks, sir, for your call. Susan from Summit, hi.
Hi. I'm just feeling this overwhelming sense of grief for the people of Poland, and I'd like to express that. And I'm just wondering if there's any way that you, that an individual can write a note of sympathy or something. If there's a place to do that. Thank you.
Well, there are. I'm the ones I've seen, however, have largely been on Polish websites. You know, the websites of Polish newspapers. And you'd have to be able to read. You could write the notes of condolence in English, but you'd have to plow through the Polish. My guess is that if you simply wrote a brief note, or maybe even online to the Polish embassy in Washington, D.C., or the consulate of Poland in Chicago, which is the closest consulate, that it would be received and greatly appreciated, you know, a note in English, something along those lines. Those would be my best guesses.
That's a good idea.
Right.
Yes. Thank you so much, Professor Pease, for being with us. It was an important conversation for us to have, and thank you for all the history
Thank you for bearing with it. It was my pleasure.
No, thank you. Our guest this hour, Professor Neil Pease. He's a professor and chair of the History Department at UW-Milwaukee, vice president of the Polish-American Historical Association, the book review editor of the Polish Review, a member of the editorial board for Polish-American Studies, author of Rome's Most Faithful Daughter, The Catholic Church in Independent Poland, 1914 to 1939, and Poland, the United States, and the Stabilization of Europe, 1919 to 1933. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing this hour, and thanks to Connor O'Brien for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Please stay tuned. We have a really good hour coming up. This book has just been released. It was reviewed on the New York Times book review book section on Sunday of this week, the front page story. David Remnick, editor of The New Yorker, on the bridge, the life and rise of Barack Obama. And we do want to inform you that tomorrow, the 10 o'clock hour, John Yoo will be with us. Crisis and Command, he explores the history of presidential power from the founding of the Republic to today's debates on the war on terror.